Fellas, I'm talking to you. Ladies, listen up. Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. The Manscaped engineering team has spent 18 months perfecting the greatest hair trimmer for your boys down below ever created, and just released the new and improved the Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer. The Lawnmower 3.0 is simply the best hygiene tool for the modern man. Because of their ceramic blade and skin-safe technology, your snags will be reduced. We got a special hookup for everyone listening. Their Perfect Package 3.0. It comes with the new and improved Lawnmower waterproof cordless body trimmer, performance boxer briefs that I'm wearing right now as we record this show, and a travel bag for you to use when we're all done quarantining. The Perfect Package 3.0 also comes with the Crop Preserver and Crop Reviver. The Crop Preserver is an anti-chafing deodorant, which ensures that your afternoon stroll doesn't end up with your boy sticking to your leg. You don't want that. The Crop Reviver is a spray-on toner for your boys down below. It's made with soothing aloe and witch hazel extracts that will give your boys that extra boost. That boost, I don't know what it is, but it's an extra boost you might need. Now, you can get 20% off and free shipping, and all you have to do is use the promo code SOUL, S-O-U-L, at manscaped.com. This is a limited time offer for the Manscaped All-Star lineup. I'm going to be honest with you, boys and girls. I got it. I used it. I'm pleased. Now, if this thing was around in my early 20s, it would have saved a lot of embarrassment. So make sure you pick yours up right now. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SOUL, S-O-U-L, at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com by using the code SOUL, S-O-U-L. So when you're thinking about hockey, upgrade the blue line, my fellas, and choose Manscaped. It's for the most important male grooming needs ever.
Nice. Soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Thank you for joining us wherever, whenever you may be. You are now rocking with the best. As always, big shout out to the brother B, our minister of social media interaction, always posting the sick graphics. Make sure you check us out on IG, Facebook, and Twitter. Soul on Ice, the podcast as well. A big shout out to our man C-Dub. He's hooked us up with the Spotify playlist. Make sure you search Soul on Ice hype songs for all the top songs our guests have been rocking. And we've also got a Reddit page under Soul on Ice, the podcast. Get interactive, be in touch with us, and we keep it moving, we keep it gully. Coming up in the show, we got the master of disaster. He's joining us, Joel Ward. But first, let me introduce you to my nephews. Double Trouble is in the house. The Get Busy Boys, Akil Thomas and Elijah Roberts. What's going on, Akil?
Not much. Got my Invisalign things taken off my teeth last week, so it's been a good week with all my teeth, and I know Elijah can't say the same, but I'm back on North America soil here. I went and visited my mom for a week in Atlanta, and I'm in Los Angeles, California now. So back home, and hopefully you can start training soon with my negative COVID test.
All right. Welcome back to North America. And your teeth are looking really shiny and white. Speaking of shiny and white teeth, Elijah Roberts, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm in Toronto right now. My tooth is in Brampton, but it's all right. And, I just finished exams this week, and it was kind of a real, like, busy, stressful week, first time having exams, but I think I did pretty good. And then last night, like, I was about to go to bed, and I went and checked for one of my grades, and I got a 94 in a class that I was struggling on, like, one of the assignments. So that was kind of a big, like, relief, and just kind of feels good to be done with it all for now. And yeah, just been chilling, playing video games, and kind of taking some time.
What game are you playing right now?
NBA 2K a little bit. NHL, been keeping up with the season that Akil and I have. My team's doing way better than his, by the way. He knows that, and he won't even try and rebuttal. And then I tried a little bit of Call of Duty, but I'm not too good at it, so I just kind of stay away from it.
So, Laj, when we were going to class back in the day when we were playing Free Ice Dogs, you kind of just like studied to kind of pass. Do you still do that now, or do you kind of actually try to get a good mark?
No, like before,
Study to
I kind of
pass.
did that because it was like it was like just pass it and that's all kind of. But now it's like my grades matter now. Like my grades from Brock weren't. It was kind of just something to like keep my mind fresh, and it wasn't like my main focus. But now it's like this year, like school is my main focus for like the next 3, 4 years, however long it takes me to graduate. It is important. And my average right now is a 75 over my 4 classes. So it's
You look at you,
pretty good.
Breezy.
I'm happy with it. And I think it, with what I have left to be marked, I think it could only go up, not down from 75. So.
Likes it, likes it, likes it. Big shout out to Blake Bolden. She just got herself her signature new hockey stick. It's called the BB Merc 350 from what's the company?
Verbero.
Barrel Hockey. That's pretty dope. That's, she's got her own sticks, got her little autograph. I'm wondering how much she was involved in the design of that, but that's
Yeah,
pretty cool.
I for me, when I saw that, I was like, wow, like that's a kid's dream. Like to have their own hockey stick, like that's unbelievable. So big shout out to her. Like we were just talking before this call me, and I was saying that like what she's doing for like women's hockey is huge. Like girls can look at her and be like, oh, like if I play hockey, like I can be an influencer like her, and I can actually be someone who's like notable and like does big things like that. So I think she's paving the way for not only black female hockey players, but like female hockey players in general. So big shout out to her.
Shout out to her. And
She's
speaking
like
of,
popping
sorry,
off right now.
what's that?
She's popping off right now. Like
Oh yeah,
I'm
she's killing it.
literally seeing her like everywhere, all over Twitter, Instagram. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, she's gonna make that mark, man. And that's what we need in the game. That's what the women need in the game. Like, she's doing it from top to bottom. But speaking of influential and making a mark, Akil, you got something that's going on right now. Why don't you fill in the audience about this new initiative?
My mom and I decided that we're gonna do this little Christmas campaign for this basically this orphanage in Jamestown, Accra, Ghana. And basically this guy named Addo, basically a local hero who's rescued orphanages and abandoned kids off the the dangerous streets there. He has 152 kids to date, and
Wow.
basically our goal this year is for the first time in their lives to provide them shelter, daily food, and a Christmas to look forward to. So we're trying to get them enough money to afford like a Christmas dinner for all the kids, and maybe a little gift for all of them. I'm not sure if that'll be possible, but we're definitely gonna try. So we're really just trying to raise money to purchase land to build over orphanages is in like more shelter for them, because like a lot of them live in very like not ideal situations. So that's what we're looking to do, and hopefully build a school one day, a garden for them. And my mom and I, like, we FaceTime them like weekly, so it's kind of cool. The guy who is a local hero though, he teaches them English, so whenever I FaceTime them, they just kind of repeat back to whatever they he taught them that week. So it's kind of cool. It actually makes my whole week when I FaceTime them. So they're all really cool, and we're just trying to do some good and hopefully give these kids their first Christmas. So their Instagram page is project.ghana.2020, and we're going to be posting a lot the next 10 days, hopefully raise enough money to give them a Christmas they deserve. So everyone follow that page and donate if you can. And I'm gonna really document everything that we make happen after Christmas as well, so we can really get to see how it impacted them and how happy it made them feel. So it's pretty cool.
This is a great, great thing. So once again, this is in Ghana, in Africa. You know, Akil and his mom are really trying to, you know, provide a good Christmas for these kids who otherwise would not be able to get it. Just as simple as a Christmas dinner. Like, you know, if you're listening to the podcast right now, just imagine that, you know, we are in a time where we have to try to raise money for some kids just to have a Christmas dinner. And I think $5, $10, $20, whatever you can spare would be great. And it could really make a kid's Christmas, even the, you know, dinner, food first and foremost, but man, a little extra little gift for them, that would be huge. So once again, Akil, give us the page that people can go on.
Yeah, on Instagram, the handle is Project Period Ghana Period 2020, and okay. We'll be posting, you know, links to everything, and you can basically find everything at that page. That'll be the hub.
That's awesome, man! Congratulations, bro. Is this kind of something that you want to carry on for as long as possible?
You know, it's funny you say that. When I was like 5, 6 years old, I remember like a couple of times I used to like sneak my TV on, like turn it on, because I had a TV in my room in Florida, and like I'd watch the you know, like at late at night, like those infomercials of like donate to, mm-hmm. you know, this village in Africa, this his name is whatever, he's like his parents died, whatever. And I used to like sit on my bed and like cry
an
hour watching. It was like some weird thing. So it almost like traumatized me as a kid, like knowing that like kids my age, like across the world, had to deal with all that stuff. So I think I've felt a calling to do this stuff for like quite a while. And now I'm actually able to use my platform, my knowledge, and like my connections to actually make a difference. So yeah, it's been something I've kind of wanted to do for a long, long time. And this is only the start. So yeah.
Sweet. Love it. So just for those out there and for you guys to know, you know that my name Kwame is Ghanaian, right? You guys know that?
Isn't that not even your name though?
So here's the story. So the name Kwame means born on Saturday, which is Ghanaian. Okay. And when I was born, my dad wanted to name me Kwame, but my mom and my aunt outruled them. And so my first name is Damon. But when I got older and started working in radio, I thought Kwame was a cooler name because there was a rapper back in the day. His name was Kwame, and you can look him up. He used to wear polka dots. His shirts were always polka dots, but it was fresh back then. So, I mean, it's totally old school, but, you know, Biggie Smalls has a famous line talking about Kwame and saying with the game, but that's where it all came from. So, yeah.
Were you born on Saturday?
I was.
Okay. Okay.
Yep. I was born on Saturday. So it's so funny. So when I was living in Edmonton, all the guys that were from Ghana, when they heard me on the radio, they're like, Kwame, brother. They were the hype. They thought they were getting represented. I was like, I'm actually Guyanese, but I still rap for you guys. So
that's awesome.
Elijah, what do you got planned for the holidays? For those also that don't know, this is going to be our last episode for a couple of weeks. We're going to take a quick break, and then in the new year, we're going to come back fresh and strong with a brand new season, more guests, just a cooler vibe for the podcast. So, and you know, we need to take some time to hang out with our families and our friends. So Elijah, what do you got planned for the Christmas holidays?
Yeah, for me, it's kind of, I'm in an unfortunate situation because I'm in the two places where I live are both in lockdown. So it's not like I can't really have a big Christmas or just like outside of my like family. So I'm in Toronto right now, probably going to be for the rest of the week. And then I'll probably go back to my home in Brampton, just have small Christmas with my family. And then think and come back to my condo for New Year's. And then in the new year, it's looking like there's a chance we could play some exhibition games. It's kind of depending on what happens with COVID, obviously, and if we're able to do it safely. So up until then, just kind of, I don't know, I still got a lot of Christmas shopping to do. I find it's a really weird year because, like, everything you got to order online. I feel like a lot of people's presents aren't going to be there under the tree on Christmas Day. So, yeah, I think a lot of Christmas shopping, a lot of video games right now over the holidays, and then hopefully in the new year we can, I know 2020 has been a tough year for a lot of people, but I think it's, there's a lot to be optimistic about for next year. And, you know, just thinking positive. And that's the only way I can think right now, is that things are going to get better for everyone. I don't think it does any good thinking negative, and, you know, it's exciting.
Elijah, when you guys were practicing early on, were you practicing as a forward or a D?
As a forward.
But what, really? Like left wing or center?
Well, we, because of the numbers, like we'd only have like 10 people out, so it wasn't really like drills.
Oh,
like,
okay. Oh, okay. But like when you guys do exhibition games, do you think you'll be like, what do you think you'll be?
Oh, I'm forward full time now. The only way,
but I go like wing or center, because like we know you're trash at draws, right?
I've gotten a lot better at draws, and every practice. I don't want to hear you lie to the people right now. I would beat
every
you.
Practice.
Every majority of the practices, I would beat you,
buddy. Okay,
am I wrong?
I do remember you beating me like once or twice, but like I don't remember it being like, I don't remember it having a thought being like, oh, Elijah beats me every time we do draws.
I'd beat you.
You definitely beat me at least twice, but
the fact that I beat you at least twice as a defenseman and you're a full-time centerman.
You're saying, Elijah, he shouldn't beat you at all.
He shouldn't beat me at all, but I beat him more than he beat me.
Well, we did take a draw in our last games in the OHL against each other, right, Lej?
Yes, we did.
And who won the draw?
Here, you.
So would you rather take statistics from a practice or from a game?
I'm going for the game.
Yeah, I'm going for the game too, Kwame. Or Damon.
Then we got to go from practice. But to answer your question, I hope to play center because – as you know, center has like the most skating and the most defense involved. So I think like those are two strengths of my game, like up front. So I would like to play center, but I kind of take pride in the fact that I can play all five positions. So I'm kind of good.
Aaron plays all five positions. I like that. I like that. You're a Renaissance man out there on the ice, bro. You do it all. I hope you get to play. That would be good to see. I know you're itching. I know you're itching to play.
I've also been itching to point out Akil's haircut. I said to him, like, I think he was looking like to go for like the weekend look. Ended up looking like the Monday, maybe.
The Monday, not the weekend. Hey, you know the mustache, bro. What's going on with the mustache, Akil? It's looking like one of them furry caterpillars, bro.
It's not really much of a mustache, but I don't know. I like to, I like it thin, so I like shave the top.
What are you, French?
Yeah, I am French Canadian, yeah. But it's just something I do, but it's not like you can't really see it right now, can you?
Not really, but like, you look close.
Yeah, I still like can't grow facial hair, and I'm almost 21. I'm going to be 21 in less than a month. Like, I thought going into my first year in the OHL, I remember like going in thinking, like, oh my God, like, at the end of the year, come playoffs, I'm like, I'm gonna have a full beard. Like, this is crazy. I'm 21. Nothing. All I have is nothing. So
not a bad thing, though.
Means, well, like, I don't know. I was just looking forward to it.
You know?
Yeah, I was just looking forward to it, though. So
Don't worry. You'll get there. One day you'll get there.
One day.
All right. Speaking of getting there, you know, our next guest is, you know, he's the OG. He's a game winner. He is, you know, one of the coolest guys to ever step on the ice in the NHL. So let's bring on the one and only Joel Ward right here on the podcast. Our next guest is no stranger to the show. He spent 10 seasons in the NHL and formally announced his retirement this year. he's being a part of some great moments on the ice, and now he'll be taking his talent off the ice behind the bench as the new assistant coach of the Vegas Golden Knights AHL team, the Henderson Silver Knights. Soul brothers, soul sisters, welcome back to the show, the master of disaster, Jiggy Joel, Wizzy Ward. What's going on, man?
Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me. Where's my intro music?
I know. We got to get some funky for you. Maybe some Wu-Tang.
Maybe some Big Daddy Kane or something.
Oh, I'm telling you, these kids don't know about Big Daddy Kane, the Wrath of Kane. All they know is Little Uzi and little Pump or something like that. That's all they know, man. It's a shame.
You want to score a hat trick, you put that Enter the Wu-Tang 36 Chambers on. Boom.
Saying these kids don't
understand. You guys are speaking a whole other language right now. I don't know.
Oh God, go download the album as we're talking. You should download the album.
I'm telling you, you guys just need to do that for the new year. I just want you guys to just download Enter the 36 Chambers, listen to it top to bottom, and you know, in your car, vibe to it before a skate, and then report back and let us know.
Okay, I'll take you up on that.
It will be your pregame album.
What's that called again, Kwame? Let me write that down.
Return to the 36 Chambers, Wu-Tang.
Hold up for him.
Oh, no, actually, no. Enter the Wu-Tang, sorry. This one, look. Enter the Wu-Tang.
Okay.
36 Chambers. That's a guaranteed hat trick.
Guaranteed hat trick all day. Wardo, how you guys been doing since the lockdown?
We're good, man. I guess we're doing all right. We're surviving out here. It's been a lot of numbers out here. So we're, of course, you know, we're in Santa Clara County. So a lot of restrictions here. You know, obviously the 49ers had to move. I think the Sharks are rumored to have their training camp somewhere else too. So we've been on some serious lockdown here, man. So we're just trying to get through and get by and hopefully, you know, see what's next after this.
So you're saying it's pretty bad over there where you're living. What are some of the things you're doing to keep yourself and the fam occupied during this time?
You know what? I go to F45. You guys ever heard of it? The gym, the workout thing in the morning. I go there in the morning, get my little 45 minutes of little exercise in to keep myself somewhat active. Kind of come home now. It's been like a little Christmas shopping here and there. And, you know, trying to get the holidays. I'm also trying to, you know, get ready for the move for us to Henderson. So that's been taking up a lot of our time here recently, man. So just packing and making sure the kids are healthy and all that good stuff. It's been a lot going on.
Nice.
You gonna permanently move down there or just kind of get a house just for the season?
Yeah, we're going to good question. Yeah, we're going to rent. We're going to keep our place here and hopefully rent it out and then maybe rent a place there because I couldn't tell you too much about it. My wife and I were pretty new to Vegas area. All we know is a strip. So,
is it outside of Vegas? Like, where is Henderson?
Yeah, it's about 20 minutes south of the strip.
Okay.
So, I think the two main suburbs are Henderson, which is down south, and then Summerlin, which is up north. So, Summerlin's where the hockey team is kind of posted up, the Vegas Knights, and then Henderson's where the Raiders are, and the American Hockey League is posted up.
You know, Cabby's out there, right?
Yeah. I reached out to him actually. Yeah. Hey. So hopefully I get a chance to. I told him I might have to crash at his place for a couple of days. So
definitely, he's probably the mayor of the city by now. So
I know he says he'll never tell you the truth. He says he keeps a low profile. Next thing you know, you get there and he knows everybody. You know how he is.
Exactly. So you were saying mid-January they're saying like mid-January is the start of the new season.
Yeah.
From your point of view, which teams are going to have an easier time? The ones that were in the bubble or the ones that were that didn't make the playoffs?
Initially, you would think the ones that didn't make the playoff. But then again, when you're away that long, like you're not sure where everybody's at physically and mentally. You know, like guys that are overseas, you know, guys that are over in Europe. Yeah, like, you know, what have they been doing this whole time? And all of a sudden they're told to rush back to get back playing. It'd be interesting to see what happens from the turnout, what teams and who shows up and who doesn't. It's hard to say. It's hard to predict, man. I'm not going to lie to you. It's because you don't know what individual guys have been doing.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We know what you've been doing. You've been getting yourself prepared for the second stage in your life. So, you know, on behalf of the crew, congratulations on the new job.
Thank you.
That's big for the industry of hockey. That's big for you and your family. When did you start thinking about coaching? Has that always been something you wanted to do?
You know, yeah, deep down inside, yeah. You know, I got a chance to be around some great coaches, man. You know, I had Uncle Barry Trotz there who paved the way and showed me a lot. I had Jacques Lemaire. I started with Jacques Lemaire. Obviously, the well-respected man, Hall of Famer. I mean, what I took from that alone, you know, when I first started, I just wanted to be happy. I was happy to be there, happy to play games. And then as I kind of evolved, let's say halfway through my career, I was really wanted to dial in the craft of the game. I think all facets of it. And I got really intrigued by all the video and all the extra stuff that I had no idea coming into it when I first started playing. And that just sparked me even more, you know, I think dissecting other teams, you know, I had Adam Oates was an offensive guy that taught me stuff that I had no idea even existed, man. Mm-hmm. And I was really appreciative of that. And just opened up my eyes and ears to the game. I thought you know, you kind of get stagnant a little bit. And I kind of thought I knew everything. You're going through your summer training, working out, skating. And, you know, I think I kind of somewhat plateaued towards the end there. But Pete DeBoer is another coach that I had. The details of it, the breakdown, I thought it was that really kind of sparked me. So I knew at the end of the day when I was all done, I knew coaching was something that was going to be something that I wanted to do. And so much to learn and so much to share, man. It'd be crazy for me not to pass that along.
How anxious are you to get started?
Oh, man. Man, I love the game, man. I could watch games. I mean, I can watch tape and players and all sorts of things all day. So I'm excited to get back in the game. It's been a long time. I got a chance to watch the bubble and playoffs there and still rooting for guys that I played with. And, you know, you still got that, you know, passion at the end, watching the finals, of course, hoping guys, you know, different plays I'm watching. So now for me is to kind of get back into it. I'm very excited, man. It's been a long time coming and just fortunate to get the opportunity here with Vegas and Henderson. And just looking forward to starting this, man, and getting it done.
So you mentioned Adam Oates taught you stuff about the game that you didn't know existed. I've heard a lot about the guy. Can you tell us, you know, what those things were?
Yeah, a lot of it, like just different angles, picking up pucks. I mean, I was a right winger. So, and at the time I was playing with Ovi and Backy a little bit at times, and I was playing with different players, but, you know, I wasn't the swiftest of feet moving up the ice. So what were some ways I could do to help my game to get up the ice and to, you know, so picking up certain pucks off the rim, certain ways, you know, changing my angle, changing my blade, changing my curve to scoop up pucks. I thought a player that I was really, I was impressed with, man, was Alexander Semin. I don't know if you guys ever seen him play at all, man, but this guy, he was gifted, man. And the way that he would pick up pucks off the rims and get into the middle of the ice so fast, like I was impressed. So just stuff like that, that like little small intangibles, you would never think, hey, if you tweak your curve here a little bit here, this is going to be able to pick up pucks a little bit better from passes, from rims, so I could get up the ice as quick as I could. And I mean, my job was to give the puck to those guys as quick as possible and just try to get to the front of the net type thing and do my thing. So that was, you know, that was one example that really kind of paved off for me that helped me. And power play was something that he kind of, you know, taught me a lot about playing a little bit of that slot hybrid net French. You see Oshie and those guys are playing that kind of diamond or the middle of the ice, whatever you want to call them. Mm-hmm. So that was another position that he spent a lot of time and worked with me there that benefited for me from like actually having probably my best year offensively working with him.
Joel, there's a lot of uncertainty this year. And, you know, I think if anyone looks at 2020, that's like the one thing they can keep saying, a lot of uncertainty. What kind of led you to accept this coaching job with the fact that there might not even be a season this year?
You know what? I wanted to be part of the game again. I knew hockey was coming back. I knew, obviously, I don't know when. but I knew at some point in the near future it was coming back, and I knew coaching was going to be something I wanted to do. So I was trying to, I've had some other offers or other opportunities to maybe be player development. You know, you can work from Zoom, work from home and with guys. And I thought that was a pretty cool piece, but I knew at the end of the day, if, you know, I want to coach the National Hockey League one day, and this seems like a good fit. I thought I had a good couple of good conversations with Manny, Coach Manny there at Henderson. And, you know, he kind of laid out a pretty good base and foundation. And I thought it'd be a great experience. He seems like a real great guy. I haven't even met him in person yet, obviously, but just over the phone and some of the Zooms that we've had, and Jamie Heward's the other coach there, and Henderson as well. And those guys got experience. And if I can just kind of take as much info as I can, and, you know, I'm pretty passionate about the game. So I knew I wanted to be back in the game at some aspect for sure.
So when players ask, you know, fellow players about certain coaches, they tend to categorize them. One thing you hear a lot is, you know, like, oh, he's a player's coach, or something like that. Have you put any thought to what coaching style you'll use?
Yeah, you know, for me, it's just my experiences. I'm going to bring a lot of energy because I'm very passionate. I learned a lot from what it's like to be a pro. And a lot of the small intangibles and the things on the day-to-day, what I learned over the years that carried me and actually helped my career. I wasn't the most gifted guy, but I was able to navigate through and have a pretty decent career. So, again, for me, it's just more of my experience is just kind of teaching and showing these guys. I can relate through top to bottom in the lineup. I played junior hockey. I played Canadian University hockey. I played junior B, whatever you want. You know, I played pretty much most leagues. So, I play power play, second unit, first unit, penalty kill, first, second units. I've been on the ice last minute of games. I've been penalty killing last. So I've been all over the place. And my thing is just give guys just the tools. I think at this league, at the American Hockey League, I mean, everyone can play. So it's just a matter of helping some guys fine-tuning their craft a little bit to get them over the edge to make sure that they can play full-time as opposed to just playing one or two or five games and happy with that.
Just with like everything you said there, how you've played everywhere, you've played every position, you've played in all these different leagues. Is there a coach that you look back and want to model yourself after? And what would you say is like the most important part of the job to you?
I would take, to be honest with you, there's one guy. I don't know if I could say there's one guy. It'd be more of a hybrid from Barry, from Pete DeBoer, from Adam Oates. One guy that I really, that helped me though play, got my confidence going was Kevin Constantine, who I had a coach in the American Hockey League my last year. So prior to that, I was playing like, I played 11 games in Minnesota Wild, up and down, called up here, sent down a week, called back up, all that. And when I went to training camp in Minnesota, I was one of the first cuts back to Houston. So I was like, man, like, I can't believe that just happened. I ended up playing games and thinking like, you know, I deserve a pretty good shot. So he kind of pulled me inside and said, you know what, man, like, I'm going to spend some time with you, teach you the game properly and get you back up there. And that year I just gained a lot of confidence in the American League and helped me flourish to transition to the following year, a full-time gig in Nashville. So definitely owe a lot to him. You know, style wise, I'm just going to be me. And I think a guy that brings energy and passion, you know, obviously I'll know a little bit more once I kind of get behind the bench to figure things out a little bit more. But, you know, just from being me and myself is me for just teaching. I think just sharing a lot with a lot of guys. And, you know, I look back and we talked earlier about me being a Canadian University player. And, you know, there should be a lot more guys coming through the ranks, you know, and playing pro and playing full time in the American League and getting that chance to play in National Hockey League. So for my, you know, for me right now, it's just my job is to hopefully get a chance to get a hold of some guys and spend some time with them and properly show the game. If you really want to, you know, make this a living and you love the game that much, you just got to put in the work. And that's what I did.
What do you think are some of the big lessons you learned in your seasons in the NHL that some of these young guys are going to really benefit from hearing?
Just being professional, man. You know, just come to the rink ready to go. It's 3 hours of work a day, man. You know, yes, I had my off days. I know there's some days where I didn't have my A game at practice, but I tried to at least try to learn something or pick up something or work on something that day. You know, come clean, come correct, you know, make sure you're just ready. Be ready for the meetings, be ready for the practices, be ready for games. And, you know, just put in that work. It's like, you know, those greats, we've all heard stories of, you know, LeBron and Kobe and all these ballers that are, they practice and play and play and play. Well, you know, if you want to be at that level, I wasn't just talented, so I had to find other ways for me, right? So I, my hockey IQ is what got me through a lot. As I said, it wasn't fast. You know, I had a good stick, but I guess you could say my reaction, my hockey IQ, maybe anticipation. My anticipation is what actually got me through a lot of the hockey years. You know, playing penalty kill, anticipating where to be, good stick, good body positioning, getting pucks out. I was good on the wall. I took passion over that. I did a lot of work with that in junior, carried over to pro, and I was able to get pucks out of my side, no problem. I didn't care like who was coming down as OD man. I was able to find ways to find my centerman, find the backside D man. So those things, you know, I watched a lot of film, guys. I watched Sergei Fedorov a lot. Just, you know, I wasn't going to do half the stuff that he was doing, but I would try it, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if some things could work in a little bit of degree here and there, you know, I think it's just about learning and try to be better and try to be the best that you can. And, you know, you'll get positive results, but come correct and like believe in yourself. His confidence is huge.
What have some coaches missed when it comes to relationships with players that you want to make sure you don't fall into those same traps?
I remember as a player at the end, I felt like my game was plateauing here, right? Like people saying, oh, you're getting older, but I wasn't really learning. For me personally, I just was going through the motions again. I think the good players, when I realized the greats and the successful players, like the Bernsies, those guys are doing all these things. Like I skate on at Yari, you guys must've heard of. I had no idea who the hell this Yari guy was until playing pro with Bernsie. And when I asked Bernsie how long he's been going to this guy, he was like, oh, since I was a kid. And I was like, holy shit. Like stuff like that, I just had no idea, right? I was just content. So always challenge yourself to be better. I never really, you know, I wasn't playing it. I was be healthy scratch here and there out of the lineup. And it's like, okay, Wardle, let's do this. Let's, you know, let's line up on the goal line and bag skate or something, for example, right? And I'm kind of like, I'm doing it. I'm getting to work and I'm sweating. But, you know, am I really getting better? Like, you know, so stuff like that, I just kind of, when I look back, those are some of the examples that I kind of think of that I'm like, shoot, man, I could have maybe tweaked that or done that, or I could have really challenged myself. I thought I was a pretty good hockey guy, pretty good brain, but I wish I just challenged myself a little bit more in different resources and helping my game out a little bit more.
So I know whenever in the past, you know, my coaches have done something that made the boys happy. Example being maybe calling off a practice when we need rest, or, you know, letting us sleep in a little bit longer after, you know, a back-to-back or something like that. It meant a lot to us. It made me think in the moment, like, you know, if I'm ever a coach, like I'm going to want to look out for these things and do them when I can. Is there any example or anything like that that you look forward to implementing?
There's a lot of things I think that from both sides, from watching, one thing that I learned was watching hockey, and Kevin Constantine taught me how to watch hockey, and I had no idea what the hell that meant. But, you know, you kind of watch whatever, the Leafs game or the Kings game or whoever, you know, you're going through it, you're watching, you see the puck going back and forth, you're kind of just staring at the TV, but you're not, wasn't really engaged in watching it. You know what I'm saying? And him just kind of me picking out certain players on the ice. You know, I thought that was another way of just my position. Obviously I was with the Minnesota Wild at that time. So like Wes Walls and some other players, Brian Rolston, some other guys that I played, like that were there on the team. I would kind of just try to follow them a little bit and learn. And like when they're coming off the bench, you know, you can tell where the hockey greats and hockey minds are at, right? When it's where they're going to be on the ice. So stuff like that, I tried to pick up on my own, you know. You know, I can't share everything with you guys because it's my little bag of tricks, but there's a lot of stuff that you could learn away from the game. I thought playing other sports, man, the coordination and just if you do play any other sports, but staying active in that sense, I think will help your hockey brain and challenge yourself, whether you play ball, squash, rack, whatever. In the long run, it will help you out in your hockey brain. It'll give that side a little bit of a break, but also still challenging your mechanism. Still, you know. So those are just some small stuff there. I learned like Jumbo was a guy that he took no days off. Coach the day off, this guy's at the rink. And I kind of towards the end, I started following through that. Whether just going at the rink, just, you know, being, whether it's student riding the bike, whatever the case may be. Just, this is your life. You want this to be your life, absorb it and make it all about your life, man. This is what you want to do. You guys are in good situations. You know, you want to be better and be as successful as you're on your team and as much as possible. I didn't know if I even answered your question. I just kept talking. But anyway.
Now that's some good advice for the youngins, you know, for Elijah and Akil. I think, you know, letting them know to be those gym rats and just live the game.
Just be at the rink. Like you got to love it, man. You got to love it. And that's the thing. Like I could be there all damn day, whether you're playing ping pong, you're whatever, you're playing games, you're watching video, you're just hanging out, you're watching the football game on the lounge room. Just, you know, really love the game, man. You respect it, I'll respect you back and I'll carry you, man.
A lot of change has been happening around the league and in very positive ways, in my opinion. You know, you getting your new job coaching, Trevor Daly's with the Penguins now, Chris Stewart with the Flyers. How important is it to set an example for the whole league to start looking at ex-players of color for roles on teams, which are hardly ever happening and have hardly ever happened? Except for guys like, you know, Freddie B and Mike Greer having chances. But how important is it for the industry and more specifically the league to see and to actually start paying attention to ex-players of color and giving them some jobs and opportunities?
Yeah, well, you know, first shout out to those guys like Freddie B and Greerzy and those guys that were, you know, set the example for the rest of us. And, you know, this is such a unbelievable time now. You know, I was fortunate to get an opportunity. As you mentioned, Chris Stewart got a job, Trevor Daly. So this is huge for hockey, man. This is what growing the game. Personally, in my sense, is taking it upon as a role model for kids, for people looking up that never thought that, you know, that Black people couldn't be a part of hockey or couldn't, you know, besides just playing, there's no other avenue in the game at all. So coaching is another aspect that I think people can get involved in. Management side. So it's such a big move for all across the game, for growing the game, for the kids. Even just that positive vibe, even just hope for even adults to understand, like, look, and listen, if guys can do it at the hockey level, you know, they can take that up on their own personal lives and carry that forward too. So, you know, this is just great that this is just the starting point. Looking forward to really knocking down more doors and to paving the way and making it more available and for other kids to, hey, it's not always about being at center ice, taking the face off. Mm-hmm. There's different areas in the game that we can be part of, whether it's coaching, broadcasting, management side. You know, we're here for the game, man. We love it, man.
So Brett Peterson is now the first Black GM, which is dope. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to that time when we can get past the first.
I know.
Yes, it's just a normal thing to see and hear all these great accomplishments from our...
It damn sucks that it's 2020, though, and it's the first.
I know, bro. But how important are the images of Black men and women in the game going to affect the future?
Oh, man. I mean, that's huge, right? Representation right there. I mean, I think growing up, I probably told you guys already 1,000 times, but Kevin Weeks was the guy that got my family into playing hockey, right? It wasn't the big guys around, you know. When I grown up in Toronto, it was, you know, I didn't really know much about the Lindroses and the big guys coming up the ranks throughout that time. My brothers and I, we just saw Weeksy, and, you know, he was kind of paving the way. If this guy can kind of do it coming out of Chester Lee, man, you know, why can't I play hockey too? So we looked up to him, and, you know, as coaches, it'd be something great. If other kids can look up to me, you know, I think that'd be great. I think going on that side of it, and Akil and Elijah, they hold big weight too for being big role models in the game as well, and in different areas. But you'd be surprised who's watching. Well, that's something that I've learned too while playing pro, man. You don't know, and if a goal or something, if I scored or whatever the case may be, and how many people reached out, man, you're going to be like, this is all worth it, man. Cause you'd be surprised at how many people are watching you. And it's an unbelievable feeling to be knowing that you're having a positive impact in your own community, mm-hmm. and your own peoples. And not just that, but people in the whole hockey community.
It's been a while since we last talked, and, you know, I was really curious with you specifically how you got involved with the HDA and got started off with that. And why is that so important to you? And do you guys have any upcoming plans?
Yeah, you know, the HDA was, man, it was just, we got together, a group of us got together. When Akeem shared his story, everybody was kind of surprised, shocked, blown away. I could not believe that actually would happen, to be honest with you. We all just got on this little group chat and just started sharing stories. And just a common theme was we all experienced racism in the game of hockey. Whether in minor hockey, pro, everybody had had an experience. So, you know, I think over time we got together, of course, COVID, and we just started talking, sharing stories. And we just said, you know what, we got to do something, you know. We just kind of formed a group. Obviously, we're just a couple of young minds coming together, but we wanted to just do something. We knew it was right. We knew we had to say something and stand up and try to fight racism, man. It's sad that, you know, I got two boys now, and the thought that they'd have to go through some of the stuff that I did in minor hockey was pretty scary. And that's what really triggered me into joining the group. You know, in case if they ever wanted to be at the rink one day, you know, I've taken a little bit of some harsh words, I guess, I've over the years in minor hockey and even in pro level, even at the NHL level. So, you know, that was my main reason of really joining, is to help with the grassroots program, help kids, you know, make kids want to love the game as much as I did. And, you know, right now we're working on some partnerships right now, some sponsorships. Hopefully, and that's going to help actually with some of our grassroots programs that we're looking to launch in the short coming little bit. So very exciting stuff. You know, I didn't know where it was going to go when we first started, but we just got together, and now it's starting to really take some shape a little bit more and more. And, you know, as I said, a lot of it, it's just holding hockey accountable, all these big institutions and Hockey Canada, Hockey USA, National Hockey League, is to make sure that, hey, they're doing the right thing and understanding that racism is in the game of hockey. And we're here to try to help erase that as much as we can.
How do we do that? How do we hold everybody accountable, work together, focus on the main goal without all the noise that happens in between and all the misconceptions that you hear and see when organizations are miles apart?
I think obviously communication is obviously big. I think just having a sit down and having communication, but also understanding where we're coming from. I think it's hard to deny when some of the stuff that I endured playing the game, and some of the other fellows did, it's hard to deny that. So for the outsiders, whatever the noise may be, and people are saying this and that, you're not in it for the right reasons or whatever the case may be. We lived it. We've experienced it. How many people here has had a banana at the back of their head thrown at them? How many people have, when you're sitting in the penalty box and you got the guy next to you there, how many people are calling you names? How many people are sending you death threats and tweets because you scored an overtime goal in a game seven? You know, how many people are you going to experience when you're going to, I was at Nassau Coliseum, and I'm skiing out for warmups in a playoff game, and this guy's making shooting basketball gestures, giving me the finger. And I'm like, what? And then I got to carry this weight all game now of like, did this guy just do what I thought he just did? And none of my teammates know. So, you know, if I make a bad play, half my mind now is like, I'm still about over here. And meanwhile, the game's going on and nobody's really understanding where I'm coming from. So we're just hoping to be an outlet in that sense. But going back to your point, sorry, it's just a more or less of us just kind of, you know, being together, obviously having communication, listening to where we're coming from and knowing that these hockey institutions got to make change. Yeah. If you're really about the change, if you're really about better, good for the game.
Mike Marzen told me a story. He and he talks about this in my film about the focus, you know, a hockey player has to have before a game. They have to see the whole 60 minutes before. And for players of color, especially back then and maybe even now, on top of thinking about the game, they got to worry about, okay, who's going to say this at me and who's going to throw what at me. And that added pressure sometimes was the downfall of some of these guys playing back in the days because they just couldn't really separate the focus. So I totally get what you're saying. And you know, I think that's a really important message for people to hear, because I feel like a lot of people, like the naysayers or those ones who are like, oh, just play hockey and we don't want to hear all this and that, they just don't understand what it's like being a person of color, you know?
Well, one thing I must say with you guys, Elijah and Akil, man, you got a chance to play with each other. You know, I struggled a lot in that high school years, junior years of my identity of like, who am I? You know, I went to school in Scarborough. I split time between high school there and high school in Owen Sound. And I played hockey, so I wasn't accepted from blacks. But then I wasn't accepted from whites because I was black. And I had a hard time of understanding who I was. I loved the game, but you know, because of a sport that I loved, made me conflicted of like, who am I? You know, I moved to Owen Sound, all white city. Then I moved to PEI. And again, so I was conflicted for a while and I didn't know, right? But the one thing that you got a chance, if I had another brother or somebody to play with in junior or somebody to bounce off ideas, I'm driving home from Owen Sound to get a haircut to Toronto 2.5 hours to get a damn lineup. Like, that's crazy, you know, but I had no one to talk to. And I struggled with that during those times. So you guys don't take that for granted, man. That was a special time that you guys would have had. I thought that was amazing that you guys can, you know, be roommates and friends and kick it like that and share similar stories and backgrounds and all that. Because I never got a chance to have that. I always said one year that I had, I played with Sean Bell. I was a first rounder to Dallas, I think, or St. Louis or Dallas originally. I can't remember. But Belzy and I were roommates in Houston, man. And honestly, it just felt like a siren. Like, it could just be myself for a minute. We could come home. We joked. We listened to the same music, hip hop music. We ate together. We kicked it. And that was a special year for me personally, man. I really enjoyed it because it was a time where finally I can actually share some of my thoughts and feelings with them. And so that was really dope, man. So I don't know if he looked at as deep as I did, but it was a special time for me personally. So be thankful that you guys got each other.
Yeah, it's cool that you mentioned that because, you know, Elijah and I, we were obviously pretty happy to play with each other, but we actually are in a group chat on Snapchat, Instagram, and Twitter with a bunch of our buddies who are all Black who happen to play hockey. We've all met each other through hockey, and we're pretty lucky because, you know, years ago, like a group of like Black hockey players might not be able to find each other because there's so like not many of them, right? So I think with the game growing in diverse ways, like we're able to have like group chats like that and kind of have a place where we fit in, and like we're Black guys who play hockey, whereas like I relate to you at school. I went to private school, so I definitely didn't fit in. I was, you know, a poor Black kid, and you know, at hockey I felt like I fit in more, but you know, I was always like the only Black on the team. Yeah. So it's cool that, you know, through, you know, the game just growing and growing, that you know, Asian kids might have a place where they feel like, you know, they can be themselves, and they feel, you know, just, I don't know, a part of something. So it's pretty cool that we were able to have that. So
that's dope that you guys have that, and you guys, man, yeah, keep that group chat close to your heart, man. That's pretty powerful. So that's cool that you guys have that going.
And you got to think about it, because years ago, like when you first got in the league, like there's no group chats, there's none of that technology to be able to like bring people together. So these guys, I mean, it's got to be envious. And I think, and you can expand on this, I think what's great about guys like yourself, Daly, Stu, who's coming out of the league, you guys connecting with the young guys like Akil and Zayd Wisdom and all these guys that are coming up, like the knowledge that you could pass on to them only can make them much stronger as people in the game and outside the game in the community to help grow the game, no?
Yeah, 100%, man. 100%, as you said. And that's what's that's huge. That's huge to grow the game. And I think there's going to be more outlets and more players are coming up the ranks, man. And the more you can kind of relate to them and more you can get a hold of them, like, you know, I think it's going to be powerful. You know, hopefully Akil will get to spend some time with you in the summers or what have you. You know, we could kind of share some stuff and some of the stuff that you learned in LA, and Elijah, some of the stuff that you're doing at Ryerson as well. You know, I'd love to sit down with you guys, man. I think it's powerful because that representation is huge. And that's what carries other sports, man. That's what carries it. That's what carries the weight.
You and I, we've talked a lot about role models and being examples in our community. Has this year made you focus on that even more because of what's been going on?
Yeah, you know, my wife and I, we've had a lot of sit down chats, some pretty emotional conversations, and with kids too, man. I got biracial kids. My wife's Filipino. And, you know, I ain't gonna lie, we're a little nervous. We're scared. You know, so, you know, for our boys to be growing up in today's society is a scary thing. And we want to just be there, be positive role models, obviously. And I think this is time where we've kind of really reflected on who we are and as a family, as a unit, and, you know, as personally as myself as well, you know, for Black and people of color. I think it's such a crucial time now, man, that we really stick together through a lot of what's going on.
So in an interview, you mentioned that you think the NHL should retire the number 22 in honor of Billy O'Ree. Just talk to us a little bit about that.
Yes, I was an advocate for that, for Willie to get in the Hockey Hall of Fame. That was long overdue. I'm surprised that it hasn't. I don't know what the process is like for that, but I mean, man, come on. Like, don't y'all think he should be retired?
the number 22. That's interesting. I've been seeing that online, and I never really thought about it. And here's my only thing about that. It's, you know, I think retiring a number is reflective of a player whose impact on the ice court is surpassing, you know, like a Gretzky, like a Fuhrer. You know, I love my man Willie, but his time in the league wasn't as impactful as it was outside the league. So I do agree with the Hall of Fame, but retiring his number, I'm not really sure if I'm rocking with that.
I see it a little differently than you. I think the number is symbolic for in different many ways. I think it's symbolic to say, hey, as hockey, we recognize. Mm-hmm. I think, sure, he didn't have as many points as Gretzky. I get that. But I think it's just a solid meaning to the game and to the people and life, to understand that you recognize the man that paved the way for all these beautiful black boys and girls and people of color, to give the opportunity to play the game. If it wasn't for Willie, man, none of us would be playing. You know, I just
think, do you really believe that? Do you really think so? Like, you know, that's a very, like, think about what you just said there. That's a very hard statement.
So no, Willie, none of us would be playing. No, Willie, I don't know who would be next in line.
Because I think there would have been another Willie down the road, but there would have been a lot of people who wouldn't have been able to play.
Because if you think about it, think about the time, okay? Willie wasn't the only, like Willie will tell you, there were guys that were lights out playing and never got the opportunity to play, got the shot. So I always look at it by impact. So when he got into the league, right, played a handful of games, it took 14 years before next black player to play in the NHL. So in those 14 years, nobody was thinking about a black player. Nobody was saying we need to. So I look at a guy like Mike Marzin, being the second black player in the NHL. And then from him, it just starts to snowball after that. So, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I mean, I think that's a hard statement to say, like, if without Willie, there wouldn't be you, Fuhr, all those guys. I wouldn't put that on Willie like that.
Okay. I hear what you're saying. I look at it as a man that obviously other people never got the opportunity, but for Willie's story and for Willie himself during that
huge time. Yeah, as far as inspirational goes, huge, you know, being able to make it in the NHL at that time when there was only six teams and to do it with one eye,
right?
Like, that's inspirational. But where the fault of the league goes is that the impact did not open up a door full of, like, think about when Jackie
Robinson. Is that your reason to say that you wouldn't retire his jersey?
I wouldn't retire his jersey only because I think retiring a number from an athlete represents what they did on the court, on the ice, you know, that skill set.
Okay. And for me, going back to that, I just think by being, I'm not saying just to do it for the sake of doing it. I'm just, this guy was the first National Hockey League player.
Color. All right, well, he's not the first player of color, but yeah, I understand what you're saying.
I think to acknowledge that, especially in the game of hockey, I think is a very powerful thing.
Yeah.
Just to add on that, like, my whole thing with retiring numbers, like, if I made the NHL and had a great career, like, I almost wouldn't want my number to be retired because, like, I look at, like, if I could be a role model and some kid gets the opportunity to wear my number. And I think there's other ways, like, to honor somebody. That's just, like, my opinion. I think, like there's going to be some kid who saw Akil score his goal and wants to wear number 44 now. And I think if you retire that number, it could kind of take away from that.
I look at it more powerful than the number.
Right.
I get what you're saying. I think, like, for sure. I mean, obviously, most people that have been retired, their jerseys have been, we're talking players with stats and numbers and all that good stuff. To me, for the game of hockey, though, I don't see this as the same as retiring Gretzky or whomever in different sports, you know. But I think in the game of hockey, I think this is it would be very powerful if they did.
I get it. I mean, and to be honest, I'd be good either way. I think
Willie. I hear what you're saying. Yep, I hear what you guys are saying.
I think Willie deserves all the credit that he gets, because his impact off the ice and his story has really inspired so many people and so many people.
Yeah. And I know there's a lot of people. Yeah. Not to go days in there, but
I just did an interview with Bettman.
Yeah.
And we talked about the evolution of the game. How do you see the evolution of the game in the next few years? What would make you happy to see in the game of hockey in the next couple of years? What would be good for you as far as change?
Just a ballpark without getting like detailed into it. I would like to see more coaches. I'd like to see more players. I would just like to see more representation all through our organizations. I think just hiring, I think, is crucial, man. Like, I've been on teams, and no discredit to anybody that I've worked with and throughout the teams or anything, but I'm going to communities where already half these kids are already season ticket holders.
Yeah.
So, and they just don't know. They don't know. The representation is not there within organizations. So I would like to see some of that in the front office part. You know, in the next couple of years, for sure, it'd be great to see some more coaches on the bench at the pro level, you know, and obviously more players coming up. I mean, that'd be great. I think I would like to see more branding, more advertising, more marketing for the league too, and for players of color, just to get that exposure more out there. I just see all these like these dope commercials, man, and like you guys see them, man.
Yeah,
you know, you gotta be like, every time you'd be like, damn, how come we can't do that?
Yeah,
like, you know what I mean, like.
Why you just got to have one guy? Why can't just one guy?
Man. You know, just and let's some of these other sports and the marketing, what they do. I don't know. That's not my expertise or anything, but I just don't get as excited when I see. And it's my favorite sport, but I don't just get as excited compared to like these other ones. Like, the other ones, I'm hyped up. Like,
mm-hmm.
I never played football in my life, but damn, I'm like.
Yeah. How they present it.
But. So hopefully the game kind of evolves in that sense of it. And it'd be great to see more people of color within the game in all facets of it, of course.
Well, this is something that kind of came to my mind like recently. And I talked to Rico Phillips, who works with the OHL and diversity and inclusion, and just talking about different things that could be done. But just curious, like when you guys had like chefs cook for you, did they ever cook like jerk chicken and stuff like that? Or?
Didn't I just tell you I had to drive 2.5 hours from North Owen Sound to get a lineup from back home in Toronto? You think somebody's cooking jerk chicken?
Oh, but like that's something like that could be done. Like just
that to kind is gorgeous. Like I say curry and people run.
Yeah,
the locker room so is
you
running.
You never had any of that, like nothing. San Jose on the road.
I had Chef Rob in DC was cool, man. And I was like, hey, I know this is a lot to ask, bro, but what about some sweet potatoes?
Just sweet potatoes.
And he was like, I got you.
Man.
And I was like, all right, man. Chef Rob, you got a soft spot in my heart, man. But
I mean, no, I was going to say these are the kind of the cultural things that, I mean, I think the league and teams individually need to start to look at. And I mean, you being in this new position, you're going to be able to influence things like that. Like, for sure. If you're not taking the opportunity out there with the Silver Knights to be like, all right, guys, today's meal, we're going to do a cultural change. I'm going to show you what I grew up on. You know what I mean? Put some meat on your legs and stuff like that with some ackee and saltfish, you know?
Yeah, I'd be, hey, pre-game. In D.C., we had Reggae Fridays. Didn't matter what was going on. We put on the XM radio. I forgot what the channel was called on the reggae set on XM. I forgot the name. But we put it on in the morning, and that was it. You couldn't touch it.
Right.
We had Reggae Fridays. But
where was this?
In D.C., in Washington Capitals.
I could see Ovechkin being a reggae guy, you know. I could see Ovechkin being a reggae man.
You want to talk about a guy that, you know how fast he got on the ice to get ready? He's gone.
No.
The only people that appreciate it was the trainers.
Wow.
A couple of the staff members that came, we had a good couple of laughs on it. You couldn't touch the channel, and that was it. Reggae Saturday, sorry.
What kind of music is Ovi into? What's he into?
At the time, it was like house. What kind of music do you think he would be into?
Yeah, them guys in it.
Not
them guys.
Country, no hip hop. I mean,
what about Hopi? Hopi looks like he's about it.
I don't know what kind of artist he would be. I think Hart hopes he's a guitar type of man.
Good, go Hopi. Okay, all right. Well,
so last one for me. Kwame always says to our guests, like, you know, next time I'm in the city, like, let's hang out or something. And I'm thinking, like, guys are probably like, yeah, all right, old man, like, for sure. But they're nice to say, like, you know, sure. You know, when they're on the show. I've hung out with Kwame at All-Star Weekend. Is he cool to hang with, or is he just the bust, an old guy, dinosaur, just a burden to be with?
Actually, he kept me. I was one that was tired. He kept me up.
I tell these kids.
He can hang. I give him that. I was the one that was struggling. I'm not gonna lie.
I'm trying to tell these kids.
Did he come in a full bright red Adidas tracksuit?
He came in an all white shoes, white suit.
You gotta look fresh, yo.
No, he came clean with it. He can hang. I give him that. I was more than impressed. But I already knew that. I give him from speaking some of the language that we chop it up with. I knew Kwame. Him and I are on the same length. So, but he kept me up. I was telling him, I'm like, hey, Kwame, I need a nap. But he was like, no.
I was trying to tell these guys, you know, that I can't wait till Akil has one of his LA parties, because I'm coming. Yeah. I'm going to be on the mic. I'm going to grab the mic, and we're going to get busy. Well, they're trying to kick me out. Yo, Wardo, man, listen, thanks so much for, doing you and being a part of everything that's going to be the movement forward and getting our game to that better place. And it's always fun to have you chop it up with us. But you know how we get down before we get to the end of the show. We do our top five. So being an assistant coach, you're going to have a lot of influence inside that locker room. Give me five bangers that you would give to your players before they get out.
Five bangers. The red man joint, the action. Mm-hmm. Time for some action. What's a good woo song?
Cream.
With a shadow chest boxing.
Yeah, okay. Chest boxing for sure. That's going to be a third liner's favorite.
Yeah, yeah. This is where you want to block shots and just fucking yeah. Just getting after it on the penalty kill with that one. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to, what's another banger? Hold on. I need a big Punisher track in there, man. I need a from the Capital Punishment album.
How about Twins? Big Pun.
Okay.
Fat Joe. Twins.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm at three. Mm-hmm. I got a Snoop Dogg.
Right.
I got my long sleeve tee.
Okay. From Doggy Style.
You got the Doggy Style.
Which one? Little Lottie Dottie, maybe?
Oh, mm-hmm. actually, okay. You know, yeah. Okay. Yeah, all right. Yep. That throws it. Yep. That's and cool. One more. Give me four, one more banger.
You got to give him a biggie, though. You
I know. Him. I know. I'm thinking of something else. What else should we do, man?
Who shot you?
Yeah, who shot you is a safe play.
Is it?
Well, it's an easy one. I was trying to think of something.
Okay, we'll go with who shot
you. MBS, that's Biggie track.
Who Which shot one? You?
Party and BS by Biggie.
That's your that's your fave right there?
Song, yeah.
All right. Akil, how you liking those five right there?
I gotta do some more research, really, you know, see if I really like them. But I'll come back, and next time we talk, I'll have a good scouting report on it.
Oh man, I'd say my go-to was "Time for Action" though with Redman. That was a banger for me.
"Time for Action," definitely. Can I give you guys a Redman story before you go? I've always got the stories. So
Redman.
Oh my God, this guy. Joel, so bust it.
He's a little, yeah, go on.
He should know Redman, though. I don't know how he doesn't know who Redman is.
He should, but should he?
Yes, he should. Like, he's.
Wait, what's culture. Your birth year, Akil?
2000.
Are you kidding me? He's supposed to know Redman?
Well, I would think he did. So, anyways, here's my Redman story.
What was your cartoons growing up, quickly?
Like, Jimmy Neutron.
I don't know who that is.
I don't remember, to be honest.
Power Rangers?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, Power Rangers. I could rock with that.
I know Jimmy Neutron. I know that one.
I actually just watched Mighty Ducks every day when I was a kid, to be honest. Like,
okay.
Hey, do you guys want this Redman story or no?
Yeah. Sorry. Drop it.
Okay, so Redman didn't even have an album out. Back in the days, it's all about mixtapes, okay? So there's this mixtape that was circling around New York, and I used to always be in Queens, New York with my cousin, and it was Biz Markie. He brought Redman on stage, and he did this freestyle that was just crazy. So you just knew there's this kid named Redman out there. He was bubbling. So they in New York, they used to have this thing called Black Expo. Black Expo was like in this huge airport hangar. It would be all Black businesses, and everybody would do the thing. So me and my cousin go there. We're walking out, and we're walking down the street going back to catch the bus. And prior to that, Scenario video came out. Remember Scenario? Yeah. Okay, so Scenario video came out. And if you watch the video, you'll see a clip of Redman. There's a small clip when the faces are changing, and one hits Redman. So we knew what he looked like, okay? So we're walking down the street now, and I see this Nissan Pathfinder. And sitting in the seat, I'm just like to my cousin, I'm like, yo, that's that Redman dude. He's like, nah, I'm like, that's him. So we rolled up. I'm like, yo, you Redman, right? He's like, yeah. It's like, dude, mixtapes, fire, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, you need to come out with an album. He's like, I'm working on my first album right now. I'm like, word, you got to give me your autograph. He's like, nah. He's like, what autograph? I'm like, dude, give me your autograph now. He writes it and he looks at his manager, James Ellis. He's like, yo, this is the first time someone asked me for an autograph. I swear to you, Wardo, I have Redman's very first autograph. Bong, bong.
Wow.
I don't know how much I believe that story, but.
Yeah, I tweaked a little bit.
Yeah.
Receipts. Oh, receipts right there. Receipts.
You're saying you're the very first autograph, Kwame. The very,
very first autograph. Ask him. I don't know if you can see
it. Oh, there's the receipt right there.
Oh, yeah.
Can you see it? There you go.
Okay.
So it says Red Man in the house. I don't know if you can see that there.
Upside down move.
Yeah, man. Upside down. Yeah, sorry about that. But yeah.
See. No, I got you.
Kwame. Yeah, man. That's a little story. I keep everything, bro. I keep everything. So that's my little Redman story. I gave you guys a big story. What's that?
I said, who would have thought, you know, like just signing something like that, who would keep that over the years, you know?
Guy like me. I keep everything, bro. I keep everything. Wardo, I know Akil and those guys are just clueless with that Redman story, but I know you can appreciate that story.
No, it's all good.
Thank you very much for joining the podcast. This is our season finale, and then we're going to come back in a couple of weeks when we get into 2021. So we knew we had to end off our first season under the NHL platform with the big homie himself. So thank you so much, man.
Okay. Appreciate y'all, man. Y'all be safe. We'll catch up soon.
Thanks, Joel. Good, brother.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Wardo.
Hit me up anytime.
All right.
Dig it. That was the one and only Joel Ward dropping jewels for our season finale of Soul on Ice, the podcast. Thoughts, fellas?
Yeah, I always love talking to Joel. It's cool to see when a player retires, like, and they know they're out of the game, they just want to, like, spread their, you know, wisdom and knowledge to everyone else, like, just because they feel like that's what, like, that's the only thing they can do. So awesome. Always awesome talking to him. And whenever he, you know, he talks to us, I really take in everything he says. So I love talking to him.
Yeah, just the fact that I've kind of said this before, like, he's been on that path that I'm trying to go on. And then even with what he's doing now, like coaching, like if you ask Akil, like I'm always like seeing like how I could be a coach or GM. And like, I honestly see that could be like my future job, like even like going over like the 3D, two forwards, or like moving more as like a five man unit, like that stuff, like I could see myself experimenting with, and being able to pick his brain is pretty cool.
I would love to one day like coach against Elijah, like when, when we're both retired, like maybe coach our kids, maybe we have kids at the same age, coach them, and just like it'd be funny because Elijah would be trying to implement like the weirdest systems ever, like two goalies in the net, like four skaters, like he'd do something like that and try to outsmart me. So I think that'd be really funny one day.
Coaching for me though, it's more like the stuff on the ice, like it's just players using their like skill and talent. Coaching is like having like the locker room tight, like just having like character guys. Like I honestly would not take a guy on my team if I didn't like believe in his character and stuff like that. And like maybe as a result of that, my team wouldn't be great. But like when I look at coaching, it's more like building like the room and like the character. And like if you look at like teams who have won a kill that we know in the OHL, like there's years that like Kingston should have won, but because of the talent they had, but it was like, why didn't they win? And then you hear like the insider scoop on some of these teams. So I don't know. That's just my take as a coach and what I see.
Well, my take is that we've had a great first season with the podcast under the NHL banner. And I'm looking forward to 2021 where we can bring in some great new guests and do a lot of cool things with everybody. So first and foremost, just want to thank everybody for tuning in and being a part of the show and helping us grow. And we'll make sure that, you know, during the Christmas holidays, we add some best ofs and do some really cool things to just keep you guys engaged. And then when we come back, we'll come back harder than ever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think the first year went really well, but I think we have a lot coming in season two. I don't want to spoil anything, but we got a couple of things cool coming on the way. So hopefully season two is better than season one. And we're excited to share everything with you guys.
That's it. That's it. And for Akil Thomas and Elijah Roberts, my name is Kwame. Thank you for joining. We'll be back pretty soon. So keep it locked right here on Soul on Ice, the podcast, baby. Bomb, bomb.
And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need ya, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Yeah. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. You goddamn right, I'm screaming on that beat. I got a match screaming on the streets. We in the club, stadium, and the arena, cousin. Put me on ice and I'm hitting that top. Trees are dusting, fussing, fighting. With myself is enticing. My enemies in the mirror, and he's always reciting the poetry.
speak of my weakness. Shadow boxing with Tyson, I'm trying to show y'all I'm beating them to the punch. Competition on the table, it's time for lunch. Though my mission is unstable, I'm scoring once, twice, three times, and I'm taking hats. Men lie, women lie, progress is based upon the facts. So let that baby shine. They sold the show and know the, they live within the grind. Now take them out that stroller, cause coming up is a champ. Prediction of Ali, he changed his name to Muhammad. We changing free to a fee, it's up to me. And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted the shit, we did it twice. I guess the proof is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. Let's dedicate this one to Jaden Linda. Let's escalate to Caddy, crush the Pinta. Or maybe you prefer that Benz, why? That big truck, I don't give a f***, only really want a house for the gift. Let's take it far down on the competition. Competition is nonsense, it's me and my soul's decision. Yeah, I only work against myself. I play against you to bench you. I'm throwing all shots to the shelf. Yeah, the top is the topic. You checking your armor. My wheel telescopic, so I'm steering my karma. The future is mine, like receiving the pass from Jesus or Jordan or Crosby, Stills and Nash. We young, and when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted the shit, we did it twice. I guess the proof is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. Nice.